The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
And good Tuesday morning and welcome to another edition of Analyze This here on your NPR station, the U.S. Virgin Islands, WTJX-FM, with yours truly, Neville James. It is a cloudy, overcast Tuesday in Paradise, April 24th, 2024. And you know, we're there, you know what I'm saying? It's all good. We're supposed to have the governor on this morning, but he's rescheduled. That's my understanding. He's going to be on tomorrow for an extended visit. We're supposed to have him on from 8 to 9 this morning. Well, he got some runners to deal with. I don't know if it's, you know, getting over here or whatever. But we'll get him on tomorrow. I think he'll be out for an hour and a half tomorrow from 8:30 until 10 a.m. or thereabouts, right? We also got the president of the Bureau of Manhattan, right? I think it's the Borough of Manhattan, City College. Yeah, the Borough of Manhattan Community College. Anthony Monroe joining us this morning in the 9 o'clock hour. And looking forward to talking with him. You know, I had a conversation with a young lady who was here with Sadia Carter, supposed to be here back in March, and she does some work with CUNY. So she had to do some work with CUNY, or she went to CUNY, and I was looking over, during that discussion, I was looking over the CUNY system, right, City University of New York, and, you know, I was just mind-boggling at how many different colleges they have in that system, 25 of them, you know what I'm saying? So I'm going to enjoy having some fun with Mr. Monroe, and that, and I mean, he got some connections here in the island, so looking forward to talking with him. Went to the Kellogg Graduate School of Management, right, at Northwestern University, right? Northwestern is a Big Ten school, Evanston, Illinois, you know, so I'm looking forward to talking with him. He also got a concentration in health education from Columbia University Teachers College. So, you know, Columbia University today in the news now because got a lot of protesting going on there with what's taking place in the Middle East. You know? So, good. But we're going to get Dwayne Henry going to be joining me. She'll be calling anytime now. So we'll do the Bush tea this morning and talk about a number of different things because yesterday we had history made. In the city, former president, day one of the trial, some say election interference, some say hush money. Former President Donald Trump in New York City, and the first witness came on, but they had to, they broke at about 12:30 because a juror had an appointment to deal with. So what's the word? We'll reconvene this morning. That's the best term. Right? And then they'll also address a situation where the prosecutors are saying that former President Trump has violated gag orders. So they're going to have a hearing on that today as well. But David Pecker is the first witness, and he's the one who bought the stories when he was working for AMI, which is the National Enquirer. I think American Media Inc. is the actual formal name. And the practice of the catch and kill, right? Catch a story and kill it, right? You know what I mean? Pay for it, what have you. You know what I'm saying? So we're going to break that down, plus some other things. Laker fans, I lose a rough one there last night, my son. I'm going to get to that in a little bit as well. You know, I was up by 20 in the third quarter, ended up losing on a last second shot by Jamal Murray, who turned his game around after he was struggling for the first three quarters and then hit 6 out of 8 shots in the money frame. You know, so it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. Playoff time, man. You know what I'm saying? Every night they got playoffs and basketball and hockey. I came back into hockey a little bit. Right? I used to love it before, but I kind of back off, but I'll get back to that. Anyway, Dwayne Henry, down the line. Good morning, Counselor. How are you?
Good morning, summertime. Doing well.
Okay, good. What about this weather, man?
You know, I'm going to tell you something. Over the weekend, I didn't leave the house at all. from Friday until yesterday, about 10 o'clock.
You are home.
You are. Somebody stopped me and they said, "Where you been? You look yellow."
Oh gosh! So you're homebody for the weekend?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, with the rain and everything, and I'm looking like we're gonna get some more this
morning. Yeah. But that's what That's what Juliana told us yesterday when we called the weather service. She said it's going to be this way for the week. So, yeah, island going to be green when it does subside. That rain over the weekend was significant, my son. That was rain.
Very significant.
That was rain.
You know, the farmers should be loving it, and, of course, anybody with assistance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So let's get right to it. Big run-ins, big historic legal case going on in New York City. The former president is actually on trial. Before we get to the details, this is the Alvin Bragg trial, right? This is the hush money election interference. Now they actually make his counselors actually, you know, made that claim yesterday.
They began with David Pecker.
Who
ran the... Because, you see, a lot of people keep forgetting. This whole thing came about, right? Because Cohen had told them, investigators, that he and David Pecker and Trump had this standing deal or arrangement to clamp down on all bad stories. David Pecker ran runs the National Enquirer,
mm-hmm.
and if anybody knows Mele, they do. So that's why they evolved the National Enquirer, because, you know, if there's any bad news out there, they're gonna know about it. And so this was a way of controlling all bad news, and they plan to do it by paying people off.
No. Before we get to
catch and kill story.
Yeah. Before we get to the actual catching and killing, right? Uh-huh. Let's go back to apparently in 2015, they had a standing agreement that this was how they were going to play the politics, right?
Uh-huh.
And apparently there was a meeting with Trump, David Pecker, and Michael Cohen, right?
Uh-huh.
So the tactic was during the campaign, right? Even before we get to the hush money part, during the campaign, if they heard anything, they'd let Trump know, and then Cohen, and the triangulation was in place with Cohen dealing with
Pecker.
With Pecker, right?
Uh-huh.
And they go from there. But it wasn't just about catching and killing stories. It was also about making up stories against Hillary and Ted Cruz. And other opponents of Trump during what is a protracted, a long primary campaign before you get to sewing up the nomination. So this isn't just about the issue with Trump and McDougal and Stormy Daniels, who actually her name is Stephanie Clifford,
right?
This was bigger than that. They were creating things along the way, like Hillary gonna die in 6 months and all kind of stuff.
This was opposition research on steroids. That's exactly, you know, they took opposition research to a whole different level.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, app research involves looking up dirt, right? They actually created the dirt.
Wow.
Or is alleged to, I should say.
So in doing so, right, you run the risk of people seeing and hearing what you're doing, right? So So before we get to the Michael Cohen going from loved in-house to being hated, right? There had to have been some other people involved who were leaking information to the authorities.
I would agree with that statement, yes. I don't think he was the only one. Mm-hmm. I think some, you know, these things build up, you know. The head of an organization or somebody very at the top usually aren't the first person to speak. Which is why cops and, you know, the feds tend to arrest when they're doing like a RICO organization. They arrest all the low-ranking guys and hope that one of them gonna rack out higher.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it works.
No.
You know, they don't start from the top and come down. They start from the bottom and go up. I mean, they've used it over the years, and so then they can. People go like, why are they arresting the lame man on the street here? Because they're hoping that little man is going to rat out the big man.
And
of course, that's how it works. Somebody on the bottom had to have said something.
Now, check this out. One of the stories that they made up was they found this picture of Ted Cruz's father with Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yes.
Supposedly on the day that Oswald killed John F. Kennedy, right?
Uh-huh.
Which was in November of 63, right?
Uh-huh.
So they were accusing an opponent of Trump in the primary campaign, uh-huh, Ted Cruz, of being the son of a conspirator to murder of a former president, assassinating a former president. This is the extremes that they were going to do, Henry.
Yeah, which is funny, because that story actually had a little traction for a while.
It did.
Because anything conspiratorial about November 22nd, 1963 is going to have some kind of traction. People love JFK conspiracies. So all the idea, you know, that was a no-brainer for them. Hey, let's just make this stuff up.
And
his father was Cuban.
Yes.
And then it said, you see, this is how conspiracy theories work. Well, his father was Cuban, you know, and they said the Cubans were the ones who did this. Boom. So his father, you know, logically has to be involved in it, it's, you know, it's by simply being Cuban, which is a, you know, pretty racist thing to allege,
mm-hmm,
but people believe that stuff.
And ironically, there are a lot of Cubans in South Florida who are big Republicans, man, and support Trump.
Yes, exactly. And that's why that story, that's why it was important to bring out that story.
No, during that primary window, and we're talking from when he came down the escalator in 2015 all up to deep down into 2016, most of his opponents were going after. Remember, you had Marco Rubio,
yeah,
Lindsey Graham, Ted Cruz, all of them got issue with it. And then the next thing you know, some story or minor rumor come out, and all of a sudden, yeah, they were stepping to the side and knowing the place and staying there.
Shut them down one time.
Wow.
Like I tell you, that opposition research on steroids was not a small operation that three people were doing. That was a pretty big operation. Because they got a lot of dirt on a lot of people. Because remember, the primary had, what, 16
yeah, man,
candidates originally?
Yeah, George Bush.
One by one, he knocked
George
them
Bush, Rand Paul, the list goes on and on.
Yeah, all kinds of people.
You check. But then what really created a problem for the then candidate who ultimately became president, right, Donald Trump, was apparently they had him recording making a very despicable, mm-hmm, right, disrespectful statement about, mm-hmm, what he could do to women because he was a celebrity and what they would allow him to do and he could do this and all that stuff. And mm-hmm, and it looked like the antennas went up at that point that, wait, no, it probably got more of these. So whatever story we hear that might come up, we got to catch it and kill it.
Right.
And this led to Michael Cohen linking up with Stormy Daniels and then ultimately Carrie McDougal, because they knew of these relationships / affairs that the president had from back in the day.
Right. So they had a twofold mission, multiple folds, but two of the main missions of this cabal was to clamp down on bad news for Trump and at the same time spread bad news about everybody else.
Were twofold, right?
Right.
And this happened in early October, right? I think it's October 8th because I read in a Washington Post story. You know, they said Trump recording having extremely lewd conversation about women in 2005. This was 11 years before the actual election year, right? And they said, when you're a star, they let you do it. That's what he claimed, right? So as a result, they got into catch and kill mode. And this is where David Pecker, because he was supporting the president big time, stepped up and said, what we're going to do is we're going to find whatever stories we believe could do damage. We're going to buy them, get the non-disclosure agreements, right? That's a big part of it, right? And the NDA, so that they can't talk about it, and then we ain't going to run the story. That's the kill part, right?
Right.
Something happened subsequent to that. Right? And what happened was apparently Michael Cohen was the man who made the payment.
Right.
On behalf of the president. Right?
Right.
And the president apparently in the Stormy Daniels instance paid back Cohen. Uh-huh. And of course this happened in 2017 while he was president. Right?
Uh-huh.
He did this with his personal checks.
Uh-huh. Right?
But then somehow the checks them still end up in the Trump Organization database.
Right, because a lot of times you see people use similar, how's the word, the way I want to put it?
Because this is for tax purposes, right?
Right, right. A lot of times, especially with, you know, I'm not an accountant. Like I always say, my nephew, he has an accounting training, could better explain it. But there's certain business expenses that might be related to a personal expense and vice versa. And so a lot of times your business, and it's funny because my nephew and I were talking about this, we were talking about the audit. He actually audited Abramoff back in the day.
Jack Abramoff.
Yes,
I remember that case. Yes. I was a senator in that year in 2006.
Right.
That was wild.
Yes.
You know, hold on there. We'll take a break right now because the story getting sweet, right?
Uh-huh.
We got Dwayne Henry on. We're talking, Bustian, we're talking how exactly the charges were filed in this case against Donald Trump and how they rise to the level of a felony, right? Because I remember now, some are saying this should be a misdemeanor. But these are felony charges. So we'll take that break. Come back right after this.
Bank of St. Croix has something for everyone. With two locations, the Bank of St. Croix provides personal and business checking accounts, online banking, and mobile apps for banking on the go, a nonprofit community investment checking account, and a 24-hour banking cash management platform. Bank of St. Croix, Gallows Bay, Bank of St. Croix, Peters Rest, and online, bankofstcroix.com. For details about our nonprofit community investment checking account, our service specialists are ready to help. Bank of St. Croix, member FDIC.
He said that black smoke was constantly coming out of the burn pits 24/7. And my reaction to it was like, wow, that doesn't sound very safe. I wonder what that's about. And in my mind, I couldn't imagine at the time that type of system operating could potentially harm our service members.
Journalism that seeks and reveals. That's On Point with me, Meghna Chakrabarty.
Weekdays at 1 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
I'm Scott Simon, host of Weekend Edition Saturday. In these divided times, what could be more important than a conversation? Conversation with someone we don't know, someone we think we know, someone with whom we disagree or think we do. Join us as we ask questions of politicians, ranchers, parents, athletes, activists, gardeners, writers, and lots more. Then listen along with you.
Weekend Edition, Saturdays at 9 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
Music can be an incredibly personal experience. A song can inspire you, it can comfort you, it can make you feel understood, it can even take you back to a specific moment in your life. And it all begins with the artist. Join me, Raina Duras, as I get personal through in-depth interviews with your favorite musicians and find out where those songs come from on World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
And we're back here on Analyze This, and we're breaking down. We are not doing Henry Galil Bush tea. We're breaking down why this case is the case that it is. And we're going to use the term as a big case and all that stuff. Time will tell if that's the case, but it is very high profile. And we got doing Henry. Morning, once again, Constance. What kind of bush tea? What kind of bush tea we got this morning, man?
Lemongrass.
That's what I'm talking about. You went to old reliable. I like that.
Yes.
One of my listeners, he said, and Ted Solo, he still supported Donald.
It's unbelievable. It's just, I've never seen anything like it.
You know what it is?
Macy must have even worse. I don't know how much worse it could be talking about your wife and the thing, but apparently he had worse, so he had to go with him. But what I was saying about the Urban Moss thing, as my nephew was telling me, when he was winning, he said there was so much over. It took him months to do this audit, and they were actually waiting on it for the criminal case.
Now hold up a second. Let's give the give the audience some background here, right? Jack Abramoff, right? He had this habit of targeting business people who worked in the insular positions, who had businesses in the insular positions, insular possessions. I apologize, right?
Indian reservations
and all that stuff, to include the Virgin Islands.
Right.
Because he had a relationship with this fella, Sean Scott, for Bridge Capital. Remember, Bridge Capital were here down in the day, right? But he also had some relationships with people in CNMI and all that stuff. And we come to find out that he was all about influence and corruption.
Absolutely.
And that audit that you're talking about, your nephew was a part of that, you said?
Yeah, he actually was the lead on it.
He was the lead.
I remember.
And when that whole story broke in 2006, I think it was, right? That was the 2006 election, right? That actually flipped the Congress from a big Republican edge to a Democratic-controlled Congress.
Right, because they had looked at all the different tentacles that Abramoff had. He had corrupted so many congressmen that a lot of them actually lost their seats and stuff like that.
And that's when Nancy Pelosi became a household name, right?
Yes.
And I believe that's when she ascended to being a speaker of the House, right?
Right, when they took over the House after the Abramoff scandal.
Because
like I said, so many people had lost their seats, even though a lot of senators, or congressmen rather, didn't get convicted, they still lost their seats.
On March 29, 2006, former lobbyist Jack Abramoff was sentenced to 6 years in federal prison after pleading guilty to mail fraud, tax evasion, and conspiracy to bribe public officials. Key to Abramoff's conviction were his lobbying efforts that began in the 1990s on behalf of Native American tribes seeking to establish gambling on reservations, right? And he dealt with the Choctaw Nation and all that stuff.
Right.
And then it goes on and on. The fella, Sean Scott, who was here, right, working with Bridge Capital, and that, you know, that kind of was what led to this amendment that that undermine our EDC platform back in 2004 with the technical amendment to the Jobs Act. He was a bridge capital. You know what he also, you know what he also did? He also went to a town in Vinton, Louisiana, right? And he got that district, right? That municipality, whatever, or that parish. That's what they have in Louisiana, parishes.
Yeah.
Right? To vote to allow for gaming at the racetrack in that parish, a racetrack called Delta Downs, right? And check this out, right? The value of the track went up 1,000% after after it went from just a racetrack to a racetrack that had gaming machines on it and it became a racino, right? And I believe Boyd Gaming bought it out. I remember when I was doing my research at the time, DV was looking at doing the same thing down here, which ultimately we ultimately adopted racino legislation. But Sean Scott, you know, he was a gamer. He was ahead of the game. He knew what he was doing. You check, and he and Abramoff, that's what they do. Lobbyists looking for angles to make money. And sometimes they go way too far and they get corrupt. And then they and people get caught up in the stench, for the lack of a better term. And the next thing you know, careers are destroyed.
And but that's what we're saying is that, like in Abramoff case, I was using that as an example or an analogy to the Trump case. In that a lot of times with these guys, their personal and their business finances are so intertwined that they inadvertently might lead somebody to investigate or the IRS to do an audit because they see a red flag that something shouldn't be on a business report that is, and something shouldn't be on a personal report that is. Or is not.
After
and,
his
conviction. That's what happened here with Trump. Is that's how they found out about these things, because his thing was so, he's so intertwined with the Trump organization that
instead of filing those payments personally, it get caught up in the Trump database.
Well, because they tried to, it ended up over there because they probably had attempted to file it as a corporate thing.
See
what I'm saying? So that'll be the thing, is that not just sitting in the database, but they actually may have transmitted that information to the IRS on another tax return. It's kind of like this, how to tell people. It's just making analogies to everybody every day.
No.
You do some private work. Me and you do consulting type of work, right? You do some private work. You don't claim it on your income tax. But guess what? That company that, that paid you $50,000, they're reporting that to the IRS via 1099. So you take the IRS, don't know that you got $50,000 from Tom Eder, but Tom Eder already reported it to the IRS.
Correct.
So you end up getting, when you don't report it, then they go, oh, unreported income because somebody else sold us that, and this is, this is how these guys get caught. You know, unreported income in one way or the other.
So in this case, right, the election happens, and what was supposed to be a historic night in November of 2016 is no longer is this historic the other way, right?
Right.
Hillary ain't the president. Donald Trump is the president, right?
Right.
Mr. Wait, what's it? The Apprentice. Right? The Apprentice now becomes the POTUS, right?
Yes.
But you know what I catch them to? Text messages. And apparently...
Well, that's another thing.
Text messages and emails, right?
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, right, on the night of the 2016 election, right, Stormy Daniels, I want to read this this particular text. Oh, on the night of the 2016 elections, Stormy Daniels' lawyer, Keith Davidson, texted National Enquirer editor Dylan Howard, and asked him, what have we done? Wow. In other words, by catching and killing by catching and killing this story, this man is now elected?
Yep.
So basically, he admitting that we did something, right?
So now the question is, what is that something? And that's
right.
what, and that's why it took so much time to get us to 2018, when Giuliani said, yeah, he made the payments, but it wasn't company payments. It was his personal payments. So
right.
there's no campaign, election fraud that took place here. But once you right. admit to the payments, then the payments had to happen for a reason, right?
Right.
And then
absolutely.
And then the ball starts rolling from there.
Right. And like I said, he reported it as legal fees, but it was a reimbursement for an expense.
Mm-hmm.
That's two completely different things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, legal fees is taxable to the person receiving it, and it's deductible by the person paying it. But an expense is not.
Wow.
Deductible. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I can't deduct an expense that you reimbursed me for.
Yeah.
Because I was reimbursed.
But that creates another.
Raises red flags in the IRS.
Yeah.
That's the point that I'm trying to make with all this talking I'm doing, is that when you create a red flag, they go dig deeper. And like they always say, follow the money. Many prosecutions, especially white-collar crime, starts at the IRS, you know. That was JSA, most of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because these guys are getting away, and then, you know, somebody files something, and they go like, oh, what is this? And then they dig and they dig and they dig, and it leads back to something else.
And then another claim that the prosecution made yesterday, right? They said Colangelo, this is the deputy attorney general or deputy district uh-huh. attorney, right? In New York. He said Colangelo said Trump paid Cohen double the amount of the Stormy Hush money payout as a part of a scheme to cover it up. But that's uh-huh. suspicious, the DA said. Quote, the Trump org was not in the business of paying double for anything. This might be the only time that happened, right?
Yes.
So the payment, the double the payment clearly was, you're not only catch and kill the story, I win, so I go give a bonus on top of it, right?
And that was a red flag.
That's the red flags that you're referencing a little while ago.
Yeah. Wow. All these things are red flags.
Mm-hmm.
If they know that your rent, your mortgage, you got a mortgage. And for 10 years, you're reporting $5,000 a month mortgage. Then all of a sudden, you decide to double it to 10, and you ain't moved. You know, the first thing they would say, well, did you buy a new home? Because I'm not seeing anything here where you purchased a home.
Yeah.
And how your mortgage gonna double. But people do stupid things, and that's how they get caught.
Wow. Wow.
That's how they get caught.
So this is where Alan Weisselberg comes in now. And for those of you who don't know, Alan Weisselberg is the CFO for the Trump Organization
right.
for years, right? And he's the one that preparing the documents, right?
Uh-huh.
The company documents. And we know of the payment from Cohen to Stormy Daniels to be $130,000.
Uh-huh.
But they said the payments to Cohen now, right, the pay is $420,000.
They have to take care of his. So he tried to keep his mouth shut for a while, a little.
Mm-hmm.
Did he have to plead guilty to the
to lying?
Yes, yeah, perjury. Yes.
Wow. Wow. Now Trump's lawyers, in fairness to Trump's lawyers, because they had their opening statements yesterday, and this is where, you know, I think. You know, you really got to be, you really got your eyes dotted and your T's crossed. You
uh-huh. know,
because one of the statements that Todd Blanche, right? That's the lawyer for Donald Trump. He said,
uh-huh.
you know, he said, he's not just our former president. He's a man. He's a husband. He's a father. And he's a person just like you and just like me. Right,
uh-huh.
and they said that he trying to protect his family, and all that stuff. Right, but let me ask this question: if he claimed that he innocent and these affairs never happened, what is there to protect?
That's true. Which one is it? The problem with your defense is that, you know, I suspect that ChatGPT might be writing these defenses for them, because
who that?
It's so,
Who that? Who is that?
ChatGPT. Because a lot of it is non sequitur. You know, they go from what? Okay, let me trade this in. When this all work, okay, we're gonna trade this one anyway. Mm-hmm. And the whole, I mean, there's no cohesion to their stories and stuff like that. And it's from one excuse to the next. Well, if you don't believe this one, then you're going to believe this. You know, I don't understand prosecuting a trial. And when I say prosecute, I mean trying a case in that manner where it's like, okay, it's like we have a thing called affirmative defenses, right? And it's just standard stuff. And when you file an answer in a lawsuit, you list affirmative. They're like 20-something, 30 affirmative defenses, right? And they're all nonsense, really, you know? But you file them just so, you know, because you when you get a complaint, you haven't got the information yet. And you say, you know what? I'm not going to attempt to answer each of these things specifically. I'm going to just throw up this defense that even if this happened, it was fraud. Or even if this happened, my client was not notified of something. You know, these are just standard defenses that you just throw out there. And it seems to me like they are coming up with their own affirmative defenses and just throwing them all out there at one time and saying that, well, yeah, they could present all the evidence they want, but one of these defenses has to stick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that seems to me that seems to be what they're doing, because nothing else explains why for so much money that these guys charge is that, well, I'll tell you why they're doing this is because they have no case, you know, and because if they had a case, they would present viable legal arguments instead of this nonsense of just bouncing around with all kinds of stuff and hoping that one of them works.
They said Trump is alleged to have reimbursed Cohen for $130,000 in hush money payments, though the statement of facts accompanying the indictment claims that then-Trump Organization Chief Financial Officer Alan Weisselberg agreed to a total repayment of $420,000, including other expenses and year-end bonus, right? Somebody who makes a false business record in a $100,000 fraud is generally punished less severely than somebody who makes a false entry in a record involving a scheme to commit $10 million of fraud, Hackheiser said. Right? They said they don't see any scenario in which Trump goes to jail, but the penalty, right? In this case, has a political dynamic involved because he's seeking the office, the highest office in the land. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
So when we come back, I want to talk about why a felony and not a misdemeanor. I know Alvin Bragg has stated it was because it was done to cover up another crime. And that's what makes it a felony. So I want to break that down so the public will have an understanding of what we're talking about. I was talking with Dwayne Henry Sambush. He's trying to break down this first ever trial of a former president being charged and indicted in New York City. We'll take a break and be back right after this.
Race is complicated. On Code Switch, we don't dumb it down for you.
And on Life Kit, we have advice on everything from money to mental health.
It's Code Switch and Life Kit from NPR.
Saturdays at 2 p.m. on WTJX FM.
If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
I'm Aisha Roscoe, host of Weekend Edition Sunday, where we're not just interested in what's going on in the world, but why it's happening and how. Details are important. So are different points of view. We're dedicated to bringing you the stories behind the big events and the small ones, too. Join us every Sunday morning for Weekend Edition from NPR News.
We
Weekend Edition, Sundays at 9 a.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
Meet an amazing American dance master.
I'm Alvin Ailey. I'm a choreographer. I create movement.
A black boy could actually dance.
Being able to say through the choreography, I am, it transcends dance.
The dance was the miracle.
For the man and his dance company, don't miss Ailey on American Masters.
Tune in April 27th at 8 p.m. on WTJX TV Channel 12.
Hi, I'm Peter Sagal. You spent the week listening to the news. Don't you think you deserve to show off what you've learned on Wait, Wait, We Give You a Chance to Impress Your Friends with your knowledge of international incidents, political gaffes, and the latest advancement in German nudists? You'll be the life of the party or the death. Either way, you'll make an impression and you can thank Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Saturdays at 1 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. right here on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.
And we're back here to analyze this, breaking down this high-profile case that has far-reaching political implications. I got Dwayne Henry joining me. Former President Donald Trump is actually on trial as we are discussing it this morning. Good morning once again, Counselor. Glad to have you on for some Bush tea.
Good morning.
Okay, so here's the question. Why is the alleged Trump crime a felony, and how will prosecutors need to prove it? And this is an ABC News story from around the time of the indictment. They said the crime of falsifying business records constitutes either a misdemeanor or a felony, depending on the circumstances of a given violation, the attorney said.
Yes.
The act rises to a felony when the inaccurate record is entered as a part of an effort to commit a different underlying crime.
That's correct.
The misdemeanor version of the crime usually means destruction or falsification of business records. When you're doing that in hopes of committing a separate crime, then it's then it's what's called a bump up, right?
Yes.
The standard is akin to the legal treatment of trespassing, noting that the mere act of trespassing is a relatively minor crime. But the charge becomes far more serious if a trespasser attempts to steal. This is a very good analogy here, right?
Right.
It's a, in the Trump indictment, Bragg didn't specify the underlying law Trump attempted to break when he allegedly falsified business records. But we know now what they're dealing with, right? They claim it was a conspiracy, then a cover-up, right?
Yes.
That's what takes it from a misdemeanor level to a felony.
Absolutely. Let me just say, I am not barred in the state of New York, and I'm not an expert at
disclaimer.
I have to put a disclaimer out there. I did look it up. New York State consolidated law is penal law, section 175. .05. And there's three sections. But a person is guilty of falsifying business records in the second degree when, with intent to defraud, he makes or causes a false entry in the business records of an enterprise. That's the first one. And the other is prevents the making of a true entry, omits the entry, alters, or erases. But remember when you were saying it ended up in the organization's database?
Yeah.
That's what it is. That was a false entry. So that's second-degree falsifying business records. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It becomes elevated, which is a misdemeanor. It becomes elevated to a to first degree, falsifying business records in the first degree, where a person is guilty of falsifying business records in the first degree when he commits the crime of falsifying business records in the second degree, and when his intent to defraud includes an intent to commit another crime or to aid or conceal the commission thereof.
175.05 or 175.10, right?
That's correct.
Right? Yes. And so this one person, a Trump supporter, right, on Twitter said, in the history of New York, no one has ever been charged with falsifying a business record from a trust, right? Because apparently
Trump made the payments to Cohen. Trump made the payments, right, to Cohen from his presidential trust, which he created when he transitioned from Trump CEO to Trump president, right? The problem was when you make the payments with them checks, don't let it be a part of the business.
That's what we're saying here. He did it, and it goes back to earlier the Abramoff thing where I was talking about this commingling personal business and business.
Yes.
You can't commingle your personal stuff with your business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. If you buy a vehicle for the business, it's for the business. But you buy a vehicle, you're driving it up and down, and they're under the business thing.
Yeah.
You know, the IRS is going to frown on that. They'll say, but you're not the,
you ain't using it.
You buy a BMW.
Yeah.
Obviously, the BMW is not being used for trucking.
You ain't using the car for business purposes,
you
right?
You see what I'm saying?
But you're using the business to mask you buying the car, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you see that? That's just one of the stupid things that people do. That you see them, I got a restaurant. Let me go out and buy a Lexus by completing the restaurant name. Really? Put in your name and pay the appropriate, as a matter of fact, the interest is probably deductible somehow, but they want to use it under the business because then they could deduct the interest payments and then they could do the 5-year depreciation on the vehicle, you know?
Mm-hmm.
These are people trying to be smart, which is what Trump likes to say. He's smart at beating the system, you know? Well, mm-hmm. Guess what? You know, Malcolm X said the chickens come home to roost.
Yeah, that's what's going on. Now, one of my listeners texted me and said the reason why we didn't have a previous president on trial like this was because Nixon resigned and Ford pardoned him immediately.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
Right? Because they knew then that what he did constituted criminal charges, which would have led to him being, indicted and then absolutely subsequently convicted, which brings us to the real question for today, right, to wrap up this conversation, is the immunity charges. They are being, the immunity claim, the presidential claim, the presidential immunity claim, they are going to be heard, I believe, on Thursday.
Right.
In the highest court of the land, the Supreme Court, right? Uh-huh. And, of course, he's already been rejected at the district court level and at the appellate court level, the D.C. court.
Right.
Right. Now he's going to the highest court. And of course, people are speculating. Well, he put three of them on the bench. So could payback be in play? But I ask this question, right? If he has presidential immunity, like he claimed, then that means Biden got it too.
Absolutely. And that is what we call an absurd outcome. You cannot have an absurd outcome, period.
Mm-hmm.
So what the court is going to do, and these people are not, they're a little bit on the cookie side, but they're not totally crazy. I don't think so. They've ruled in other cases quite competently and stuff like that. And I think what they're grappling with is finding a way to carve out some sort of exception to create some sort of presidential immunity. However, it cannot be a blanket immunity. I just simply cannot see that. And like I said, Department of Justice memos and lower court rulings have demonstrated this precedent that presidents don't have, former presidents, they're not immune. We already know they're not immune from civil stuff. And it was always assumed that they were not immune from criminal prosecution for stuff that they did. And to assume that would mean that a principal is a president is omnipotent, and that would be way too much of an outcome. You know, I'm going to stake my reputation, whatever it means, on the line right now and say the court is not going to give him a blanket immunity. I just cannot see that. That would be absolutely floored if they did that.
No, next thing too, at the district court level, Judge Chutkan, she actually cited Supreme Court rulings in rejecting his argument that he is immune. So she put the onus now on the Supreme Court, or at least down the road, which is happening on Thursday. Wait a minute. You know, Ayo got a history of rejecting this type of belief.
Exactly. She should have. And something, the courts always have to be reminded. That's good writing on the part of her clerk and herself. And that's why when we do briefs and stuff, we try to remind the court that, hey, you know, 10 years ago, y'all said this, so just last year. And it's really good when you find a case that the judge himself ruled on, as you have with Alito, I think, in that, not Alito, Bush.
Scalia.
Gorsuch.
Yeah. George Gorsuch, Neil Gorsuch.
Right. You know, when you find cases like that, you just throw that in their face. And that's what Judge I can never pronounce her name, but Madam Judge from Hirana from New York, I mean from D.C. One of the outcomes, the possible outcomes of the Supreme Court is they could actually send it back to her so that she can rule on what a criminal act is.
Yeah,
which is kicking it back down. Mm-hmm. But then the problem with that, from a political point of view for anti-Trumpers, is that case would then go on for another 2 years.
Yeah. So they have that ability. But the real issue is here was what he did on January 6th. Was he doing that as president or President Trump or candidate Trump?
Clearly it was candidate Trump, and that's what Jack Smith says, that these were not presidential duties. These were candidate duties. He was campaigning. How is speaking at a campaign rally a presidential duty? But this is the kind of absurd things that these guys are coming up with.
But don't forget Mark Meadows, them were claiming he was still in his official capacity as president.
All that kind of nonsense.
Right? But check this out. But what hurt Mark Meadows, right, is I believe he is part of that RICO case in Georgia,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
And he was claiming that, well, I was a federal employee.
Yeah.
Right, so they should be charging me in the state, not in the city, and the 11th Circuit told him, "Yo, you're no longer working for the federal government. So even if you were doing it then, there is no law that protects you now.
Because
you're now Citizen Meadows.
Exactly." And that's the same concept that Jack Smith and them are saying applies to the president. The president is saying basically that he's not like any other federal employee. He's this special person that gets to do what he wants. And Jack Smith and them are saying no. The president, just like Mark Meadows, and if what's good for Mark Meadows is good for Donald Trump.
And they actually went back, right, to the Federalist Papers. Because there was this debate with Hamilton, them, and all that stuff. There was this question, our debate, this question. And Hamilton, the Crucian, originally out of Nevis, said, no. Just because you were president, that don't mean that when you ain't president no more, you can't be looked at in a tribunal. That's the term that I use, right?
Yes.
In a tribunal, right, for egregious acts while you were president. You can't. So because remember, one of Trump's argument is double jeopardy, right?
Right.
And he was saying, no. We addressed that. I think the Chief Justice name who was looking at later on his last name is Story. Joseph Story, I think, is his name.
Yeah,
right.
Joseph.
And he was referenced by Mitch McConnell, right? Remember now, McConnell them say. Remember now, he went through a second impeachment, you know, right?
Right.
And he was impeached in the Congress, but they only get 57 votes when it was time to convict, right?
Uh-huh.
And you needed 67. And Mitch McConnell said at the time, the reason why we couldn't vote to convict him, or I couldn't vote to convict him, was because we have another branch of government that deals with this matter. which is the judicial branch, right? So the question is, will this be raised on Thursday by the prosecution when they're making their arguments, telling the justices you can't have it both ways? If the senators are telling, told us after they voted no to convict, that the reason why we didn't convict, and Jack Smith made this point, right? 30 senators, right? Claim that, look, this ain't for us to deal with.
Right.
This is for another tribunal, right? Uh-huh. Right? In other words, the tribunal being the third branch of government, the judiciary, uh-huh. right?
Right.
Uh-huh. Then you can't come back and say, no, it was for them to deal with.
Exactly. And what the prosecution is most probably going to do, you never know what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. But I suspect that they will use all of it. That the argument from the legislative branch is persuasive authority. When you argue a thing, you use Supreme Court precedents, then you go to the appellate courts, and then you go to the district courts and the state courts. And when it's a case of first impression, you tend to, because there's no other existing ruling, you tend to rely on what we call persuasive authority, and these include law review articles, foreign books, and legislative history to determine, where we should go on this. And so that's part of the legislative record. And I'm pretty sure that will be used in their argument.
Well, we're going to see what's going to happen, because today they're going to pick up the testimony with David Pecker, because he was on the stand when they had to break yesterday. But they're going to also address the gag order, potential gag order violations. So it's going to be interesting to see where the penalties are, right?
Yeah, that's today and tomorrow.
That's today. They got to hear what's set for today. Yeah, the 23rd. So we're going to see how that panels as well. Thank you very much, Poussin Bush T.
You're welcome.
And we're going to see what's going on. And don't forget Thursday, right? Arguments as it relates to presidential immunity. And then we got to wait and see how long it takes the justices to rule on that matter, because we're just six plus months away from the election. And in order to provide a defendant with a proper jury, they need the time to do the due diligence. Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
You're welcome.
Okay,
Good.
When we come back, we got President Anthony Monroe from the Manhattan Borough Community College joining us in hour number two. We'll take a break. Be back right after this.
The views and opinions expressed on Analyze This are entirely those of the on-air participants and do not reflect those of the station's board, management, staff, or underwriters.
Ah, sometimes you need a moment to just step back, relax, and listen to your favorite song. I'm Raina Duris, and on the next World Cafe, maybe I can help you find something new to love, or maybe remind you of something you've been missing. There's so much music out there to enjoy, so take a moment, take a breath, and tune in to World Cafe.
Weekdays at 10 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1.
So I spent the past year trying to figure out what news designed for 21st century humans might look like. One of the things that really stuck with me was that we now know that humans actually need hope to get up in the morning. And I don't think as a journalist I ever thought about it that way.
We're always looking for new and better ways to understand the world we live in. That's On Point with me, Meghna Chakrabarty.
Weekdays at 1 p.m. on WTJX FM 93.1, your NPR station in the Virgin Islands.